Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airways at that time again. It's Saturday in the Park in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Dr. Greg Roscoe. Yours truly producing in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, it goes by quick, 60 minutes. It's more popular than 60 minutes. Catch it on blogtalkradio.com / Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, where you can subscribe to podcast powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me, let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic to threes, Peter. And that's how I usually opened up the Cleveland show, Doc, laying down it. So we'll do it with you now. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And a great guest you're bringing in once again. I call her a legend. Take it away, my friend. I'll see you at the 10:55 mark.
All right. It sounds good. You've given me a lot to talk about to start with here, Mark. But I'm doing well. Life is good. Interesting, fun. You know, doing the show, I've met so many interesting people. I've learned so much. And, you know, it keeps growing. You know, our listener base keeps growing, as well as friends of the show. So it really is excellent. People can get a hold of me, as they always have, gjrmd308@outlook.com. Today, I do have a friend of the show, Dr. Deborah Gilman. She's a PhD psychologist. Tremendous resume. You know, I ran her resume again, and the short form was over 12 or 14 pages of great things that she's done. Currently, of course, she is in private practice in the Pittsburgh area, but she does a myriad of other things with regard to even research, teaching, just a variety. Most of her training was done down at Tulane down in New Orleans. So anyway, superstar. And, you know, what brought her in again today? We want to talk about conflict. And, you know, it seems there's a lot of conflict in our lives these days, whether it's family, by having family moving in, living with us, you know, problems at work, conflict of work, where, you know, the staffing is somewhat short today in many businesses, and people are asked to do more and maybe things that they weren't asked to do before, which may cause quite a bit of conflict in their work ethic, their job descriptions. And I had talked to Dr. Gilman about that, and again, she does know quite a bit about conflict resolution, and, you know, overall, how can we solve it? What's a program that we can maybe implement to go ahead and decrease conflict in our lives? And then reciprocally, by doing that, we tend to have a healthier lifestyle, and our beingness is far better. So, Dr. Deborah, how are you? Again, the same thing. You're doing great, I know, because the weather in Pittsburgh is doing great.
Absolutely. I'm having a great morning, and I appreciate you having me on again, to talk about a really important topic that touches all of us. There absolutely is no situation or no relationship that we have that doesn't have the potential for some tension or some disruption. And as human beings, we all experience conflict, and we tend to see conflict in a negative light. But I like to really see conflict as having positive outcomes and potential benefits for the relationships that you are maybe experiencing conflict within.
Wow. I think it's an interesting point of view. You know, Dr. Deborah, you talk about conflict. I think we all look at conflict, or many of us do, being negative, that it's a bad thing to have conflict. And I think some of the questions that may come up are, you know, well, what exactly is conflict? Where does conflict occur? You know, is it something we as human beings deal with daily, and maybe it's not as important in certain circumstances or certain relationships? Tell us about it, Deb. Tell us about conflict.
Yeah.
you know?
Well, conflict, again, it's something that we all experience. It's some kind of disagreement or incompatible viewpoint. And oftentimes there are many different causes for conflict. Miscommunication is certainly one that I think is probably the lead factor in when we have conflict. Maybe we misunderstand, or we were misunderstood or feel misunderstood. People can't maybe effectively express their thoughts and feelings, or maybe they have an expectation that was just implied and the other person didn't realize that that was the expectation. So there can be some confusion over, you know, sure, what people were communicating with each other. Maybe differences in values, beliefs, opinions. I think we see that a lot right now in our society, where even like the political ethics,
sure,
religion, those things lead to a lot of different conflict. And it's challenging to find common ground and reach a resolution, especially when it's something that is like a value that it feels really held strongly with people.
As far as getting into that, today we've got people from all over the world migrating to U.S. You know, the border situation, is it amplified when we're talking about different languages? And, you know, people come in not maybe understanding the English language as well. Is that also increasing conflict? Can it do that as well?
Absolutely. And, it goes to that communication piece. When we can't communicate, or there's misinterpretations in how we're communicating, or even that inability to communicate, people can not understand what the other person's actions are. They may misinterpret them. That's part of our brain. You know, we make assumptions about people based on our own beliefs and our own values. And oftentimes we attribute things that we see that we don't understand to being part of that person's character or that person's makeup. And when we do things that maybe are unintentional or a slight to someone else, we actually blame the situation and not ourselves as the person. That's kind of a protective thing. So what we often have to do is take that step back and say, okay, maybe it is the situation and not necessarily the person. But when we have things like, scarce resources or limited resources,
yep,
or people feel like their resources are being infringed upon, or somehow something's going to be taken away from them, that can lead to a lot more of the conflict, because now there's competition where people feel like there could be an advantage someone else is getting that they're not getting, or that something could be taken from them. Then they have an unmet need. And then again, that hits that basic value of safety, you know, like, do I have enough? Am I going to be able to have enough if this other person's in my territory?
Wow. You know, I think, you know, looking at this multifaceted situation, and, I think maybe for an individual or someone like you that may be a mediator in this, I think it's understanding the conflict, right? What is the conflict here? What are we talking about? You know, you're mentioning competing resources. There probably is a variety of causes that may lead to a conflict situation, correct? Whether it be at home or, you know, as we mentioned the other night, at Jiffy Lube. You know, could it be there or at Walmart or somewhere like that? But also this could occur in our family, whether it's husband, wife, children, correct?
Absolutely. And I think to your point that you just said, is that increased understanding and learning about what's important to the other person might be the key to resolving and really being able to have that thoughtful, respectful dialogue. There's a great story about the orange. I don't know if you've ever heard about the orange, where like two kids are fighting over the last orange in the house, and they go to their mother. And mom being, you know, just a very fair mom, decides that she's going to cut the orange in half. Now each of the kids gets, what they want, right? You get an orange, you get a piece of an orange. But both kids are really upset because each of the children needed the whole orange. One child wanted to make, you know, a cake that needed all of the orange peel, and the other child wanted to make a big pitcher of orange juice, and they each only got half of what they wanted. So they were still upset. had mom taken the time to really understand and learn about what did each child want this orange for, they each could have gotten all of what they wanted, because one child could have had all the peels, the other child could have had all of the inside and the juice of the orange.
Sure.
So it would have made for a better situation. So I think step one, whenever we're dealing with a conflict, whether it's in our family at work or even with the guy at the Jiffy Lube, it's really trying to understand what is underlying that conflict. That's often not something that we explore, because we're just like, hey, I want the orange. No, I want the orange. And it's like we both can't have one thing.
And, Deb, you know, as far as that, which I think is an excellent story, and, you know, it seems a very solvable situation if one were to take the time to understand the conflict. But I think, you know, in a processing situation, how do we get rational people that maybe act irrationally to sit down at the table and talk about what they really want? You know, how do you get them to communicate? You know, maybe there's anger involved. Who knows what else? But I think the big thing is to get them to that position so that one can start to rationally solve the problem. How do you get there?
Yeah. That is a good point, because minor disagreements, even this disagreement over an orange, right, could escalate into something a lot bigger. And that,
yes.
Again, we go back to our biology, right, Doc, where it's like our brains are supposed to keep us safe. And so when we feel a threat, we go into fight or flight. And our bodies, we don't have any control over this, right? Our bodies are pumped with hormones that facilitate us getting out of danger. Even
and
when
adrenaline,
a disagreement, adrenaline and cortisol, like things that, you know, get us pumping. And when that happens, our brain isn't connecting. We're just reacting instead of responding. So the first thing we have to do is learn how to maybe take a step back and pause and breathe. And if people can actually remember, stop, S-T-O-P, it allows you to start thinking about how do I manage conflict and to stay calm. So S would be literally stop, right? So you want to you want to take some time to breathe, and you can allow yourself then to feel that your body is relaxing, and you're able to then think about T, which is take a few breaths, right? S-T. And then, the O is observe. Observe what's going on. What's going on with my body? What thoughts am I having right now? Because sometimes we tell ourselves a story about the other person, about the situation, about how I'm feeling. And then I might be having really strong emotions. And so I have to determine, do I sit in this conversation now, or do I have to take a pause? And so that's the P, is proceed. What am I going to do to proceed with the most responsive action that I can have? That most responsive action might be taking a break. It might be walking away and journaling. It might be having that conversation. So you have to make an intentional choice to decide, am I ready to have this conversation?
And, you know, when I say patients come in to see you, and they come in because they're upset at work or up at home, when there is conflict, do you start putting steps in like that to get them to express the situation, to maybe look at multiple facets? Is that how you would start a dialogue or start trying to get them to relax about all this? You know, how do you calm them down? Because they're coming into you because they're very upset, no doubt.
Yeah, and actually sometimes when I have, you know, people in my office talking together about problems, that they get upset in the moment. And our brains actually has this really interesting thing that they mirror each other. We have mirror neurons. So if one person's upset, the other person may become upset just because our brains are mirroring each other. Like if you yawn, someone else in the room yawns. So if we actually do the same thing with calming and we can keep ourselves calm, we can mirror those neurons to the other person. So you doing your part to remain calm actually can help the other person to stay calm as well.
Calm down too.
And so, and definitely gaining insight, you know, like being able to say, why am I upset about this? Because then you can communicate that better to the other person, and you're actually using, you know, innovation and creativity to come together to engage in constructive conflict resolution. Because when your brain is activated from a calm place, you can actually generate new ideas. You're using that frontal cortex, that big human
yep.
part of our brain, that mammal part of our brain, to think about ideas, solutions, problem solving. We can't do that when our brain isn't connecting and we're just very upset. So that is one of the first things that I teach, is how to keep yourself calm so that you can improve the outcomes and start problem solving together.
Wonderful. And, you know, with regard to that excellent information, just from a human standpoint, what level of problem tends to lead to conflict? How serious does a problem have to get to really qualify as a conflict? You know, is it a minor situation, or does it have to be a major problem? You know, or is that very individual, you know, as far as what people perceive is being done to them?
Yeah, it is very individual. I mean, something that one person might think is very minor, not very important, may trigger a big reaction from somebody else. And so it's based on your own life experiences, maybe how you've been treated in similar situations. Because, again, our brains like to categorize things and make our lives easier for ourselves. So, for
sure.
example, we were talking about the Jiffy Lube, right? So if you went and got your oil changed somewhere and they maybe charged you too much, or they did something wrong, and the next time you go and get your oil changed and they do that, like the same experience happens to you, you might be even more prone to jump off at a really heightened state because you remember the last time this happened, and now you're even
sure.
more upset, and you feel, you know, that there's this injustice. So it could be a lot of different things, and it is very personal for every person.
Wow. And so that overall, having said all that, internally, we need to learn how to do conflict resolution with how we work in the world, what we see in the world, how we develop relationships in the world. You know, because again, this stress of conflict does affect our health and our well-being. Do you agree with that as well?
100%. I always tell my clients, begin from within. You cannot control other people. You can only control yourself. And again, if you can start to dissolve that conflict from within and understand, why am I getting so upset situation, and then be able to communicate it to the other person, then it will help in terms of how you get the resolution that you're looking for. But if you're really upset, no one's going to listen to you, because it's really scary to have somebody come
sure.
at you or be yelling or be upset. Your brain then goes into fight or flight, and now everybody's in this back and forth conflict. If you can remain calm and understand, why am I so triggered by this, why am I so upset by this, you can then figure out, how do I talk to the other person
sure.
so they can hear me, instead of I'm attacking or defending my behavior. You're in a much better place to reach an understanding when you can begin from within and say, what do I want to communicate to this person in the situation so I get to a meaningful resolution?
Got it. And I think, you know, a couple of words come to mind. You know, one is accountability, also responsibility. You know, the individuals need to have some responsibility for these situations also, so maybe they don't occur and become a conflict, you know, and again, being accountable for their own behavior. Do you feel that's part of this also, Deborah?
It is. It is. I think that there's, in any situation, there is a my part and an other part. So to be able to say, how have I contributed to this particular situation? What has my role been? It allows you to be able to make amends for your actions, and then make changes to ensure that further harm or further conflict doesn't continue, and that healthy alternatives can take place. And being accountable is, you know, I oftentimes hear people say, I'm sorry you feel that way. And I think it's that we have to change the way that we apologize or take our accountability to say, I'm sorry that I harmed you. I'm sorry that I did this thing. Whether you agree with it or not, like, I'm sorry I made you scared. I'm sorry that I misunderstood. Those are the things that are going to build that bridge together to connecting and allow people to be able to have that, to have the other person be able to see that you're willing to make acknowledgments that you may not be perfect. And it reduces that defensiveness that the other person might have as well.
Is that important in families who are going through divorce or, you know, are on the way to a divorce, you know, with these kind of conflicts, trying to help solve them to prevent a divorcing situation within the family?
Yes, absolutely. It's being able to stand in someone else's shoes for a minute and understand how your behavior, even unintentional, could have impacted them. And to be able to say that I will acknowledge that what I did hurt you and it was wrong because I should not be the person who is harming you or the person who you feel unsafe with, whether you're a parent or a spouse. And then be able to say, you know, in the future, I will do something different. In the future, I will, you know, take a few breaths before I talk, or I will plan to have this conversation with you, or, you know, I will give myself a timeout if I'm getting upset. So there are things that you can do that actually will show beyond just the accountability that not only are you owning your behavior, but then you're willing to say, in the future, I will do this so it's a safer relationship for you.
Good. And, you know, as far as, say, using these kind of techniques, what about at work when your boss is giving you a hard time, you know, or a senior above you that's giving you a hard time? How do you approach them as well? You know, if the lines of authority are there and maybe you're the low person on the totem pole and you felt you've been wronged, you know, can you use this kind of thinking to go to a boss or a manager or to a senior in your organization and talk to them about these things?
Yeah, it's a hard thing, but a lot of people do experience conflict in the workplace. There's a Psychology Today article that actually looked at this and said 85% of employees deal with some kind of conflict at their workplace on some level. And 49% of those conflicts are a result of these personality clashes or these warring egos where, again, it feels almost like there's a competition. And so when conflict is all about winning or losing and people perceive conflict as, like, I want the orange, no, I want the orange, it makes it even more difficult because there has to be a loser and there has to be a winner. And so I think that when we're in the workplace and we're handling conflict, you have to think about how can we cooperate. In the workplace, there is so much interdependence of the relations that are there from, you know, the person who's sweeping the floors all the way to the CEO. Everybody relies on one another. You can't say that one person is not as important as someone else. So we have to think about how can you go and approach your coworker or, you know, the management effectively? And so, again, communicating what is important to you or what type of dilemma that you're having and being able to say, you know, use those I statements so that people don't get defensive. Being able to give respect to the other person if they're talking to you about, well, this is how I've experienced you in this situation. And again, having that accountability is really important. It is hard though, because at work, you know, if there is conflict, it can make people feel nervous, right? That their reputation could be at stake, their role in the company could be at stake. There might be some shame associated with it if you did something that you feel, you know, bad that you did, and then you're afraid, like, what could happen if that person goes to, you know, HR or above you. So I think that it can be really challenging to be open and honest in the workplace. But again, we have to operate from the framework that we see conflict as an opportunity to be better employees, to have better working relationships, to maybe even have better quality of a product or a thought within our company that we're having or within the team that you're working with. So framing it as this is an opportunity for us to transform rather than stay stuck is, I think, probably the biggest way to help in the workplace.
Beautiful. And, question. You know, we talked about with this conflict, like the orange, having a winner, having a loser. What's the other option? You know, what other option are we putting out there with regard to compromise? You know, how do you get to that point that there's not a winner, there's not a loser, there's a compromise solution, and the organization can live with that? How do you get there, Deborah?
That, again, is understanding what is important to the people that are having the conflict. If there is a way to go below the surface and figure out what is being threatened or what is at stake, then how can we get to a resolution that allows people to not feel threatened or not feel like this thing that they're competing for is going to be a lose-lose or a win-lose situation?
Right. A tough situation, but it takes – you know, again, we have a slew of questions, Doctor. As far as corporate training, no doubt there's training that organizations may benefit from, correct, in handling corporate conflict resolution, so they make their organization better, correct? Are you part of that type of a thing?
Yeah, I actually do a lot of training for professionals who are involved in positions like HR or positions like mediators or work with the court system, where there's always going to be a conflict because people are disagreeing over something, whether it's a divorce situation or maybe a family estate situation, or even they're disgruntled about something that happens in their job. So absolutely, there has to be training so that the leaders understand how to manage conflict within their systems. And so people recognize what their conflict management styles are.
Sure. I mean, it has to be a very important part, you know, of the large organizations we have today to keep them productive and, you know, doing well. We're going to go to L.A. Mr. Mancini, you're in the studio in L.A. I understand you have questions for us and calls.
Well, I got a slew of them, and let me start out with Travis from Orange County. He goes, the problem with some of these jobs today, it starts with the top. If the top doesn't lay a good foundation, then what ends up happening, people go to work, punch a clock, and they really don't care about anybody's well-being except themselves. Wow, that's an interesting concept on the work environment.
Doctor, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's actually very true. When people don't feel like they have a voice or feel like the culture of the workplace is one that there's a massive degree of frustration, a lot of employees not being able to give any feedback or the top management not even taking into consideration different people's viewpoints, then disagreements are going to happen and people are going to really feel like they're burning out. I mean, burnout is when, you know, the resources you have are low and the demands are high. And this is why we see people going to work every day feeling like they're just hamsters in a wheel, because they're not necessarily valued for what they bring to the table and they don't have any way to have a voice and resolve some of the business practices that are making them feel unhappy.
And Deb, how does one set up an organization then that tends to value employees, that tends to let them know they're a valuable part of our culture? How do you set that up? How does McDonald's do that? You know, how does that happen?
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure exactly how McDonald's would do it, but I know that companies that allow their teams to give feedback to managers who then can take the feedback to an upper-level management or to the CEO to inform policies to inform, you know, what is happening in the culture of the organization, and letting employees express their thoughts and concerns in a safe space allows the employees to feel better about going to work every day, knowing that they have an active role in shaping the community or the community in shaping the business practices,
sure,
and the culture of the business. And so they really need to listen actively to their employees and feel like if there are things happening that are impacting negatively on the culture of the workplace, that they actually have to investigate those things and they have to take them seriously and try to find any underlying conflict sources that maybe aren't evident just by looking at the company, but when the employees start bringing them, they have to make sure that they're taken seriously and that they're looked into.
So it's a matter of an organization's responsibility needs to make sure we don't have a toxic culture, because people are coming to work for more than just a paycheck. They want someplace where they can be heard, where they are valued. You think that's a fair statement?
I think that's a very fair statement. And I also think that when a company sets up roles and procedures that everybody understands what they're supposed to be doing, there's some clear, defined boundaries and expectations, it helps people to feel supported because there's, again, the safe container around them. There's some structure around them that provides grounding for the employees and also provides a pathway when things are not going well to how they could reach a good solution and then determine how to move forward and change things in the company.
Thank you.
Evaluating
go ahead, Mark.
In an ongoing way is helpful. Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Marcus from Tallahassee, Florida says, the problem today, guys, I really love your show. It gets better and better each week. He says the companies are micromanaged, and you're starting to see this across the board. There was an article about tables, people waiting, you know, in restaurants and how the service was getting bad across the board with entitlement being a focus of jobs with young kids and stuff. But the biggest thing is, unless you run a company, and I've been part of some companies where the minute you walk in the door on a Monday morning, they all sit down and have, hey, how was the weekend? How's the family? How's everybody doing? And this was a company of 30 people. We all got along with each other. If there's any conflict or anything, we talk about it. And that company was one of the best I worked for in years. And I moved on because I moved to another state. But, man, oh, man, that's how companies should be run, and it's getting into the trenches and finding out how people are rather than lining our pockets with profits. Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dr. Deb, how does one set up that organization? No doubt that is time-consuming, and there should be some structure on how that's done. You know, that can chew up an awful lot of time every day if we're talking about family and children. Say if they're on the clock. I think the gentleman's correct, but indeed we're there to work. And, you know, does it have to be that, you know, that may chatter may go on all day? How do you limit it, I guess would be my point. How do you limit it to get them into the production mode but also know that the company cares? Is that a tough one, Deb?
It is. It's a good balance to strike. You know, I think that to his point about the micromanagement, I think micromanage employees, they are disgruntled. They don't offer ideas. They don't give honest feedback because they feel like their supervisor's not going to listen to them anyway. So then your employees don't grow. They don't make sacrifices. They don't cover shifts for one another. They might call in sick. We see that happen, you know, a lot in places where people feel disgruntled. They don't want to put in extra effort to their goals. That leads to a lot of turnover. And then the more people come in, the more micromanaged the system has to feel. And so to be able to have maybe even a weekly check-in meeting that says, how's everybody doing? Or make that open conversation when people are struggling with something. You know, maybe there's something at home that they're bringing into the workplace. We bring ourselves everywhere we go. So if we have a bad morning, because our car wouldn't start, the coffee pot broke, and our kid didn't turn in their homework. We're going to work carrying all that on our backs, and that's going to impact us. So having a culture where people feel like they can talk to one another and that they don't have the boss standing behind them with a checklist will make that culture feel supportive and feel good. And then maybe somebody will cover for them that day and say, okay, you're really having a stressful day. What can I take off your plate today? Or the boss could say, you know, do you need to leave a little bit early to, you know, take care of your car problem?
Sure. Wow. No, I think you're right. That can be done. But, you know, sometimes in organizations that can get out of hand because then people become expecting of those favors. And, you know, you're there to run an organization with production. You want a happy culture and a supportive culture, but we can't lose sight of what we're there for. And, you know,
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think the expectations have to be laid out, and there has to be some clear-cut behavioral guidelines for what would, you know, what actually is happening. But I guess I might challenge you a little bit in saying that if somebody is coming to work and they have all of this in their minds, they're not going to be really productive anyway. So having a place, a workplace environment that allows them to feel like they can come in and not sit there all day almost in like a therapy session and vent, but to be able to have an open culture that says we respect you, we understand you're human, things are going to happen, and be able to ebb and flow or be a little bit more flexible, I think is what fits the modern day employee. Now, certainly people might take advantage of that, but you'll know that, right? You'll know if there's somebody that's taking advantage of it or somebody who's really, you know, just need some help because they're human.
Sure. I mean, I agree. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. It's good to have that supportive culture. We all want to be supported, you know, in the workplace because life does have ups and downs, and every day you're not going to be 100%, you know, of your ability to produce. And so you want, you know, maybe a little slack every once in a while. But I think just in general, I don't think that can get out of control, that we lose the purpose of why we're going to work, which, again, leads to production. So go ahead, Mark.
I agree.
Thank you.
Let me throw one more, and then I'll let you guys get back to it, and you guys will get back to me after this one at the 25-minute mark. But Robin from Warren, Ohio, says the downfall of some of these companies, and, boy, you guys are bringing some great points, is favoritism ruins a lot of these companies, too. When you play favoritism with different employees, I think people should be treated across the board. Accountability seems to be lost at times. But favoritism, I have noticed wherever I've worked, it's the drawback, considering if you've been on the job a long time and then somebody comes in and gets, you know, they can come in late, they can do this and that. So favoritism would be one that I would bring to the forefront of this great show today, guys. Wow, Robin's an avid listener, too, Doc.
Yes. Well, thank you, Robin. And, I mean, I think any organization to watch that, because once you show favoritism to a certain class of employees or an employee, it does cause maybe conflict with the other employees not being that favored, or the boss having, you know, a favored employee that does a lot of slack. You know, we've had in our organization, we've had management companies come in, and there's a saying that they've used many times with my employees and in my organizations, and they use the words, no case on post, no case on post, meaning that, you know, we all have personal problems, but when you're coming in with your case, all right, it doesn't do us any good in the organization to have you there on post. You need to leave your personal problems at home. And sometimes it's hard to do that, and I understand that. But in general, I feel as a leader of an organization, that we need to go ahead and remember why we're there, but yet create a supportive culture, which is a very fine line. Dr. Deborah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think favoritism is a really bad management practice. I think employees get resentful. They start to lose morale. Certainly, they don't want to work because working hard is supposed to get you better things,
right,
or more responsibility or maybe even an increase in your pay. So there's little benefits when from being on the manager's good side rather than doing a good job, right, for some of these people. So if you're not going to get the accolades or the positives that you think, they're going to say, forget it. They're going to lose productivity. They're going to spend more time, like to your point, gossiping and maybe griping,
sure,
about how unfair this is instead of actually doing their work. So I think running a workplace like a schoolyard is not a good thing. There shouldn't be favorites. There should really be, again, those clear expectations for what your role is in the company and what you're supposed to be doing. Even having, you know, quarterly performance reviews where people are able,
okay,
to sit down and say, look, I've met my criteria here.
Yes,
what am
goal.
I not doing? Like, if they feel like they're not being favored, why am I not getting ahead, but somebody over there did? Can you,
sure,
give me some feedback about how I can get, you know, Sally's position? Because Sally just got here. Am I doing something wrong? So if you can have a culture where that is, you know, where that is acceptable or where you're having those check-ins, that would be great.
Excellent. You know, I think that takes good management, good HR, managers or leaders that understand that, and then able to implement good policy to maintain, you know, that positive culture where people can get ahead and are definitely reinforced because they've done a good job. Mark, do you have anything else in the studio? Are you still there, Mark? Hello? Deborah, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, let's talk a little bit more.
I mean, if you want to talk a little bit about how sometimes managers handle conflict, too, because that can,
sure,
come into play a lot when we're thinking about how people are happy in their positions or in their workplace. There's five styles of conflict that are really in the literature when you talk about management style. And each skill or each management style, I think, uses a different tactic depending on the situation. And I think our listeners would probably recognize maybe some of these things that they do in their own lives, too, because it's not just about the workplace. But there's an accommodating style. And when,
yes,
you think about accommodating, you think about the putting other parties' needs before your own needs. So if you're an accommodator, you may not care very much about the issue. You care maybe more about the person and that relationship. So prolonging the conflict is not going to be worth your time. Or if you think you're wrong, you might also, you know, go along with the other person. So accommodators is about keeping the peace. And sometimes for small conflicts and that aren't really that important, accommodation is great. The problem is, especially when it comes into management, if they accommodate too often, or maybe they're accommodating their favorite people, it can actually create larger problems within the workplace. And it's not going to solve any issues in a meaningful way. So it's very, you know, it's not something that's going to be helpful at all.
Sure. Do you have an example of that?
Let me think. So, like, imagine you're making an advertisement for a new campaign. And, you know, employee A wants green as the choice. Employee B says, well, I like the green, but I think I would like it to be red instead. Raymond may say, I don't really care what the color is. So instead of arguing about it, he just goes along with Gina, right, or goes along with the first,
yes,
person and just says, okay, I'll go along with your color because it doesn't really matter to me. So that would be an accommodating thing. Like when the issue is not that important, but the relationship and being on a team is important, you'll accommodate the other person.
So the value is putting on the relationship as opposed to the specific item.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So in all your conflict management, you have to think, is the issue more important than the relationship, or is the relationship the thing I want to preserve over the issue? Some people
And
might
who
avoid
makes
conflict.
That decision? Is that the in charge?
Yeah.
Is that the management? Is that the board? You know, where does that start, Deborah?
Well, I think it's individual, because you also, we as individuals also have comfort or discomfort with different situations. And so depending on how important we feel this issue is, we may fight for it more, or we may let it go because of the relationship. So I think the manager also has to decide what's more important. Is my team getting along and everybody feeling valued more important, or is pushing an issue more important than the relationship? Because if you push an issue too much, you're probably not going to have these positive relationships. So again, we'll go back to that Jiffy Lube example, right? So if I go to Jiffy Lube and they've overcharged me, I am wanting a refund. I don't really care if the cashier likes me or the worker likes me, because there's a lot of other places I could take my car. So that relationship is less important to me than my issue. And so I may fight a little bit harder to get the thing that I want from that, because I'm not going to care about the relationship. In the workplace, you know, if that happens too much, I think people do feel devalued, because they feel like, why am I even here? I'm not important to this workplace
pleasure. And what about in the home with, you know, husbands, wives, significant others? How does that work there with an accommodating style?
Same too. I mean, I guess there's some things that, you know, that you might think are very important. These things are like your deal breaker things. And there are other things where you can compromise on that's not really important. And so you have to really pick your battles and figure out, is this worth me having a difficult relationship, or is this issue something that I can let go of because it's really not that important? Some people say, you know, what they choose to watch on TV, or, you know, who loads the dishwasher. These may not be things that are that you want to fight about, or maybe there is something about, you know, me loading the dishwasher, it has to be my way, and then the other person can say, okay, I'll go, you know, clean the toilet. Like, you know, there could be different things that you can agree upon.
Sure, a trade-off.
And yes, exactly.
That, you know, there's a lot of those things in our lives, correct? In those trade-offs, in those decisions, the battles we want to fight. Again, this happens no doubt every day, many times to all of us, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And some people, you know, depending on the situation and depending on what type of day you're having, you may choose to avoid the conflict, choose to you know, really push the conflict. And again, it's understanding, why am I reacting like this to this thing? That's going to be the key for getting through it.
Interesting on accommodating. You have another style for us.
Yeah, the avoiding style, right? It's your head in the sand. I like to think of it as the ostrich. Like, what? Conflict? Huh? I don't even know what you're talking about. Sometimes they're, you know, avoiding the conflict could mean ignoring it. But it could also be removing one of the parties. So if you're at work and you're on a team where there's a lot of conflict, or maybe one person is causing a lot of the conflict, a manager who has this style, who doesn't really want to resolve the issue, might just put that person on a different project or say, hey, you know what, why don't you go over here and do this other thing? So this could be effective if you feel like a cool down period is helpful, or if you are not ready to engage in the conflict. If you think about, you know, with your family, if there's something that's happening and you're like, okay, I'm not really ignoring this, I just don't know what my stance is on this, I may not want to engage in the conflict right now. So avoidance shouldn't substitute for resolution, because when we sweep things under the rug, they get bigger.
Yep.
And the conflict can be worse, but it can give you time to gain a different perspective, and it can allow some issues to resolve themselves. So avoiding for a small period of time until you can figure out what's going on with you or going on with the situation can actually be an effective style.
So that overall, what that tells us, you may not want to go ahead and react immediately if you're upset, and maybe let it go to you calm down, you're more rational, and then your brain's in the correct spirit, go ahead and solve a problem so that we don't have to do it immediately, but overall we'll solve it, just not at this very moment.
Exactly. Like, let's go back to the two employees that are maybe disagreeing about the color of the new ad campaign. Maybe the deadline is looming and they still have been battling it out. They haven't been any accommodation. Perhaps the manager pushes the deadline back to give them some time to take a step back from each other, to complete maybe another piece of the project, and then start considering, okay, what really is important about this color? So that space, we haven't completely pushed off the fact that we have to make a decision about the color of the ad. We just maybe took a pause to allow people to calm down and step away from the conflict a little bit.
Boy, I think that's so important, and I think that is a nice way to handle, you know, conflict also. If you can look at it, maybe put yourself a little bit away from it rather than attack the situation. And going on, what other management style do you have?
Compromising is one, right, where we sort of, everybody concedes something. So let's talk about that orange. Cut it in half. You each get a piece of it, but that's a lose-lose. Mom thought it was a win-win by giving each person half, but they both lost something. They had to give up on something to stop fighting. So sometimes compromise can happen, and it can be a good thing if there is this deadline, right? So we don't know if it's green. We don't know if it's red. Okay, let's make it purple.
Sure.
Now, neither of them got what they wanted, but at least we got it done because the deadline was coming up and we had to launch this campaign. So it might not, the solution just needs to happen, maybe not be perfect, but if we keep using compromise too much, that can lead to resentment because no one's happy and they might not feel like they got what they wanted, they sacrificed too much. They might even be more unwilling to compromise in the future because this didn't feel good for them. And so if a manager uses that compromise technique all the time, it's going to make people feel really bad about themselves. But sometimes it can be helpful because each person actually felt heard, and we're just trying to facilitate agreement and find solutions.
Sure. You know, with regard to, again, you've said some beautiful things. You know, as far as dealing with conflict, you know, stress comes into play here a lot. Anger can come into play as well. And overall, we want to try to what? Minimize that in our daily living and our daily dealing with these things so that we don't take a lot of stress on ourselves. And we know anger isn't a good symptom to have either, because it does color how we look at things and how we function. So the goal of what we're talking about today, Ray, is conflict resolution. And I guess we can look at that at many different levels, whether it's a personal level or a corporate level or a group level. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, it happens in all our different facets of life and all the different roles that we take on. And I do agree that anger, you know, it is not good to have that, like, ongoing stress and ongoing anger. Our body never gets a chance to get out of that toxic stress pattern, and that can be very unhealthy for us. But I think recognizing, why am I angry? Like, anger is usually like someone has violated my personal rights in some way. And so being able to have a culture or a relationship or family relationship that you can talk and feel heard and actually have some personal growth or some relationship growth from that anger is so important. And it allows you to let it go a little bit, because now it can drive the change that your relationship needed, or that your organization needed.
And possibly there'll be a beneficial outcome for everyone. You know, we talked about the acronym STOP, correct, a little bit ago? And, you know, I saw in the literature also there's one called CARE, C-A-R-E. You want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, so the big thing in CARE is the first C. It's communicate. So when you are feeling upset or you feel like something has happened, that you have open communication. And hopefully the relationship that you're in, whether it's a workplace relationship or family relationship, it allows you to have that open communication. And again, you're focusing on the problem at hand. You're not focusing on the other person. In the marriage literature, this is called a soft startup. So if I came home and said to, you know, my husband, oh my gosh, every day I come home and there's dishes everywhere, you never load the dishwasher. That probably would not result in a positive outcome, right? But if I came home and said, gosh, how can we set up a system so that the dishwasher gets loaded in the morning so we come home to clean dishes? Now that's going to allow us to have an open dialogue about what he can do and what I can do. And that's the A piece, so that moves into actively listen. Listen to what the other person says without interrupting, so that when you communicate your feelings, you want to have the other person communicate their feelings back. And then be curious. Ask some open-ended questions and say things like, do I have it right that this is what you're thinking? Did I hear you correctly? That avoids some of those misunderstandings that can really get conflict to spiral.
Wow.
And also by asking those open-ended questions, we're understanding why this thing is important to this person. So if mom would have asked the kids a couple open-ended questions about the orange, she would have understood what each person wanted to do with the orange, and then there could have been a better solution. The R is review options. So what are some solutions? Let's make a list. Let's figure out what things might be an opportunity to agree to some sort of resolution for this. And you don't have to think that, you know, again, like when you think about brainstorming or you think about resolving a conflict, just throw some things out there. Don't judge it. Don't be too quick to shut someone down. Just say, what could we possibly do? And then the ultimate goal is that win-win solution. So we're going to end E with a win-win. So it might not resolve everything, but if you can say, well, how do we both benefit from this in some way? Like the kids with the orange, if they could take the peel of it and the other person could take the juice of it, they both end with a benefit. And that's actually exactly what they wanted, right?
Absolutely. And you had one orange, you didn't have to buy two. So economically, it was a good decision as well. But that's excellent. And I think we're getting finished up here. Mark, are you there in the studio?
I am here, and I'll take one quick one, and then we'll wrap it with about less than 2.5 in this great show. One of the callers, I believe it's out of Massachusetts, Dalen, says the problem with some of these companies is business is going to be business, pleasure is going to be pleasure. When you mix, it doesn't work. And then you got to face that person on a daily basis. Somebody usually gets fired or somebody usually moves on. That's the downfall. I've experienced that more than once.
Wow. Deborah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, you know, there has to be a balance between morale, productivity, and happiness. And I think with some boundaries and some clear expectations, there is a way to get all of those things to be in harmony with one another. And so you don't want one thing to be taking over more than another. Like if we have too much camaraderie and it's playtime, then you don't get productivity done. But if it's too much productivity without the positive morale and the good-natured relationships among employees, you have a really horrible negative workplace where people feel burnout. So finding that sweet spot and that harmony is important. And I think it's that communication piece and really listening to what other people are saying that help to shape a lot of that culture for the companies.
Excellent. Mark, are we ready to wrap this up?
Yeah, we are ready to wrap it. And Deborah, it's always a pleasure to get you on this great show, and we can't wait to get you back on here again. If anybody wants to get a hold of you, which I'm sure they will, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. You can email me, deb@drdebgilman.com. And my website is www.drdebgilman.com.
And Dr. Greg Roscoe, the fine establishment you have there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, how would they get a hold of you?
GJRMD308@outlook.com. Thank you. Dr. Gilman, you were outstanding. Thank you. Mr. Mancini, you did a great job running the board. Listeners, thank you all for calling in and listening to us. We'll talk
thank
to you,
you
next
so much.
Week. Thank you.
Thank you very much for everything. Catch this archive version on blogtalkradio.com/for Mancini Sports. For the double duo out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly, Mark Mancini, signing off in L.A. Have a blessed one. We'll see you next week. Same time, same channel.
Thank you.